Marijuana seeped into the world of white middle-class kids in the 60s as dormitories lit up and the music demanded that everybody must get stoned. The Beatles smoked dope and spoke of it freely. There were other drugs, of course, but by the 70s, LSD, once so hot in the late 60s, had become, in the words of one connoisseur, the Studebaker of the drug market, used only by aging dilettantes. Sure, there was hashish and mescaline and mushrooms and opium here and there. But marijuana was the meat and potatoes of the drug diet in the early 70s, and a lot of it came in through South Florida, especially the Keys. But in the early 70s, there was more tolerance for that sort of thing in Key West. Jimmy Buffett called it an open town of smugglers, shrimpers, and crazies. It was the end of the world. Pot was part of the daily life of Key West. The town drew the arty types, and they needed their inebriants. Ernest Hemingway had his rum and whiskey. Tom McGuane and his friends had those and added marijuana to the mix. Marijuana was everywhere, and the Key West cops, some of them at least, looked the other way. Colombians flew Piper Cubs full of pot to homemade landing strips hacked out of the undergrowth of the lower Keys. Shrimpers took huge loads of it onto the little boats, storing them in the hold with their legitimate haul. Everybody wanted it. In a resort town, it was hard to keep a business going, especially a family business, when tourists were gone half the year. "We got to put food on the table, man." That was the rationale. "What's the harm in selling a little bit under the counter?" Shrimpers doubled their pleasure by filling their boats with pot. They'd deliver loads of commercial American cigarettes to South America and then bring back pot on the return. Dope brought a better price than shrimp. If they were at sea and the feds were closing in, they discreetly tossed the bales off the boat, away from government eyes. If the feds saw it, there wasn't much they could do, at least nothing that would hold in court. The floating dope was not in the possession of the boat's captain or crew. They called those errant bobbing bales square grouper. If the feds came up too fast, smugglers unable to outrun the Coast Guard had a few options. If capture is unavoidable, Tom Corcoran said, there occurs an instant and practical definition of the price of freedom. Sink the boat and get rescued. The purchase price of the boat plus cargo rarely exceeds lawyers' fees. Better luck next time. Soon, every bubba with a boat was out there unloading bales of dope from Colombian ships, or the bubbas got in their pickups and went out in the swamps, greeting the pilots who brought their little planes down on those tight clearings, barely missing the royal palms on the way in, and coming to a stop just 10 feet back from the mangroves. The Key West economy was dependent on the pay cycle of the U.S. Naval Base, and to a lesser extent, on the fluctuating tourist trade. So marijuana provided steadiness and continuity. To live on an island this small, you need a different psyche, a different mindset, said a prosecutor who led an investigation of Key West's bubba system for selling drugs. Marijuana, in their mindset, was no different from shrimping. There is simply a different moral and legal system in Key West. Coast Guard cutters from the Key West station would stop shrimp boats for spontaneous safety inspections. If they found marijuana, the guard would arrest the shrimpers, seize the dope, then fly a pirate flag on the cutter's mast. The seized dope would then show up for sale within a week on Duval Street. Everybody wanted a piece of the action. During season, T-shirt shops thrived, selling rude or obnoxious shirts with slogans to tourists ambling in with wads of cash. In the off-season, the shops nearly had to peel customers off the sidewalk. So selling marijuana was to keep the business alive and to keep Mom and Sis and baby boy Phil fed. Besides, it was just marijuana, not that much different between that and a cold Budweiser. Soon it was more than a little extra cash to tide people over. When they realized how easy it was to deal with the Colombians and peddle the pot for them, shopkeepers got a little more brazen and upped their allotment. The business was fine, but now they needed a larger house, a faster car, a bigger boat. Check that. They didn't need it. They wanted it. They were getting greedy with the easy money, and dope was good for the local economy. Key West police had several options: enforce the law, look the other way, or participate and supplement their income. Through marijuana growing, dealing, and trading wasn't officially endorsed by the Key West power structure. A lot of local businessmen and public officials either participated in the trade or at least allowed it to happen. Morehead shook in the state capital, in the more conservative parts of mainland Florida, and this was all the evidence they needed that Key West remained a pirate culture. How's that?